Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration, collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
Today is with Nick Orchard. He's with a company called Soapbox Productions. Nick is a filmmaker. He's a documentarian. He's been making movies for many, many years. And his new film called Having Our Baby, The Surrogacy Boom is going to be airing on the documentary channel over the next little while. And I think is going to be available online going forward. So check it out. Nick has got a lot to say about surrogacy. And I'll be honest with you. This is not a topic I thought I would have been addressing on my podcast in the near future. But what's really interesting about this is I learned a ton. I learned a ton about what's going on in this world here in Canada, what's called reproductive tourism, what's going on around the world with this idea of IVF and surrogacy and how laws are different and the ethics behind it and the controversy and so on. So I hope you tune in and it's a celebration of life, this film, and our conversation too. And I was so glad Nick was able to join me today. And don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my own podcasting and my speaking and some of my writing. And you can support what I'm doing through face-to-face on patreon.com. There's a link there on the site. And don't forget rabble.ca as well for more podcasts by me and others. Coming right up, Nick Orchard. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, Nick Orchard. He's a Canadian filmmaker who has a new film coming out on the documentary channel in the very near future. In fact, it's already had its world premiere. Nick is here with us on Face to Face today. Thanks so much for your time today, Nick. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So is that true? World premiere has, in fact, happened?
Yes, it happened 6 days ago. Tuesday night, yeah, the 28th.
And we've got quite a few. We're going to talk about this. We're going to post it on the site. But just right out of the gate, the film is available on the documentary channel site right now. Is that not right?
It is, but go there quickly because they only put it up 1 week from Friday, I think, Friday or Saturday. So you've got until Friday or Saturday to see it for free online. But otherwise, you can catch it on several viewings on the documentary channel.
Very good. Excellent. So documentary filmmaker, you've explored comedy and music and narrative and drama and so on. What is it that gets you interested about a topic like surrogacy? So the title of the film, Having Our Baby, The Surrogacy Boom. Where does it start for you? Is it just the interest of a journalist, of a documentarian, or does it go a little deeper than that?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm a storyteller, I think, first and foremost, and I just read lots of newspapers and magazines and that sort of thing, and every now and again a story jumps out at me, and it did so in this case. I probably read about it 2.5 years ago or so, and I realized when I read the article that I didn't actually know very much about surrogacy, or at least I had some misconceptions about surrogacy, and I figured, you know, probably a lot of people do, and yet at the same time, it seems like an incredible story. So whenever I do see a story, well, that's all very well and good, but then I have to convince somebody that they want to put up some money and, and air the documentary. So, you know, for everyone that we convince it's a great story, there's probably 8 or 9 that I still think are great stories, but the networks don't agree with me. So, you know, that's the process, you know.
So when you say there was misconceptions for you, so would you say, I mean, I guess you could probably say this about any film, I suppose, or any kind of major project like this. There's a lot of, you know, moments where you're like aha moments, I suppose. Was it like that in this project? I mean, did this really peel back the layers for you?
Well, yes, it did. I mean, just right off the bat, when I read the story, I had assumed that most surrogates in Canada and elsewhere would actually prove to be friends or relatives of the couple who were having difficulty having a child of their own. And that turned out to be totally wrong. The vast majority of surrogates are actually total strangers to the couple that they eventually have a baby for. And I just found that absolutely incredible.
And I mean, immediately, I would hope the listeners are already starting, if they haven't seen the film, are already starting to sort of ask some questions. So is that, and you know, obviously the subtitle of the film, The Boom, I mean, are we talking about, and I know you do address this to some degree, and quite a few questions you kind of leave unanswered, ethically, you know, from a business perspective, I mean, I go boom. I go, people aren't friends and relatives, therefore there's got to be a lot of money in this game.
Well, again, that's you would think that. But in Canada, well, the rules are different all around the world. The laws are different.
Right.
But in Canada, 10 or 15 years ago, they passed legislation which said that a surrogate in Canada cannot be paid to be a surrogate. So not only are these surrogates doing this for free for a stranger, but they're doing it for free. They are allowed to collect expenses, but those have to be receipted expenses. So, you know, when they have to buy clothing, or when they have to miss work, or when they have to get transportation to go to a clinic appointment.
Or I think it was when Elise says something about when she has a craving for blueberries.
Blueberries, ice cream, yeah. Well, sometimes the surrogates don't want to submit those receipts because they're embarrassed about it, you know. However, the expenses do add up, and the average I discovered for a surrogacy, which of course is about a year, not just the 9 months, but it's a year by the time you do all of the medical work and such leading up to it. The expenses can run about $20,000.
Yeah.
So it's still not cheap, but it really staggered me to learn that they could not be paid, and yet there were still so many surrogates willing to do it.
One of the characters that you follow, Heather, at the beginning of the film, talks about why would she do something like this? And she talks, you know, it sounds like they've got a very interesting, her and her husband's relationship. Sounds to me like they want to give back. And, you know, at one point she jokes about how her husband said, oh, you know, 8 is enough. You know, once I've, you know, given birth to 8 surrogate babies, then I'm going to, you know, move on and live my life. And she's got 3 reasons for it. And she said, one, because it makes me feel better as a person. You know, it makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something, and then it makes me feel like I'm doing something that matters.
Yeah.
Would you say that those are kind of, you know, if you were to have surveyed people, do you think that's where, you know, you would land? Because it seems to me, you know, not getting paid, you know, why would you do this? I mean, now a male asking the question, right? One of the thoughts I had as I smiled, boy, it's such a good thing that men don't have to give birth. We would just, the human race would have faded out years ago, don't you think?
Yeah, but as Heather and other surrogates have said, they actually enjoy pregnancy.
Yes. Yes.
They feel good about it.
Yep.
They had all surrogates these days, by the way, it's not a written law, but it's basically understood that a surrogate these days must have already had children of her own.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, you know, so you don't suddenly want to become attached to the child that you're giving birth to. If you already had your children and you're quite happy with them, then, you know, so you've had a child before, so they already know that their surrogacies, generally speaking, were easy. Heather had easy pregnancies with her the two children she has of her own. So it came as a bit of a surprise when she developed preeclampsia about a month or maybe a month and a half before the baby was actually due and had to go to the hospital to be induced. And we cover all of that in the film. We have a camera there, and we have a camera in the delivery room and such. So that came as a bit of a surprise. But at the same time, most surrogates know that their pregnancies were easy and that they enjoyed them. And at the same time, they have a big heart, and they, you know, they want to do something good for someone else. Heather had one more reason which she threw in there, which I found interesting. She's a bit chubby. And,
yes.
She said she liked being chubby, or sorry, she liked being pregnant because she is most of the time chubby, but she can think at least to herself, I'm not chubby, I'm pregnant.
I'm pregnant, yes.
And that gives her some self-esteem, which she otherwise wouldn't have had, you know?
Which is a pretty interesting place to start for having someone else's baby.
Yes. But, I mean, her story was very interesting because she decided she was going to become a surrogate. She first thought about doing it when she was 12.
12 years old, yes. Yeah.
I think she knew, I don't think it's in the film, but I think she knew there's some family friend or something going on.
Oh, okay.
This. And she thought, gee, you know, when I grow up, I could be a surrogate.
And at 26, she was a surrogate mother, correct?
Yes, if you say 20. So.
I think that comes out in the film. I think it's 26, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I see this footage every single day, but
that's right.
You know, I'm moving on to new projects.
Yeah, so good for you.
I'll take your word for that.
And so you should be. Hey, listen, before I'd love to hear about some of the reaction to the film that you've seen and so on. I love the delivery room sequence, and I think it's with Heather. I mean, it's really beautifully shot, Nick, and I had tears in my eyes. I'm a father, two kids, and my wife Elizabeth, she loved being pregnant. She loved having kids too, and it really took me back to those moments. And you know, I couldn't help but smile with Dad in the background and the camera, and you know, just the warmth of it all. And you start to get a sense for why somebody would do this.
Yeah.
You know, bringing a life into the world. This is, you know, you're helping somebody else along. You're boy, I mean, talk about building community. I don't think you could get more tangible.
Yeah, I mean, that filming and that shooting was rather special.
Mm.
It there's a story behind it, of course, as there would be. I'm based in Vancouver, and that birth was going to happen in Edmonton. It was meant to be a home delivery, but she had to be induced. At the same time, I knew that I couldn't get there with my camera person. I potentially couldn't get there with my camera person in time. You never know how quickly these things are going to happen. And in the end, I had to line up about five or six camera people, because you never know who's going to be working on another job or when. And actually, it happened while the fires were happening in Fort McMurray.
Okay. Okay.
And so a lot of camera guys were already out shooting.
We're already out shooting, right.
And the guy that I got in the end, thank God for him, he couldn't get access. There are some camera people that have their own cameras and some who hire and rent them by the day as they need, you know, in case they need a different type of camera or something like that. Well, it happened in the evening, and he had no chance to go and hire a camera. He was the only guy I could find available, and thank goodness he actually had his own home video camera.
Wow.
And that's what he shot it on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Video camera.
What a great... I thought you were going to say he shot it on his iPhone.
Well, that was the next choice.
Right.
My camera guy here was saying, you know, I phoned him up and I said, okay, it's happening in Edmonton. I said, I don't know if our camera guy has anything. And his first response was, does he have an iPhone?
Right.
He shot it on his home camera, and it's a testament to his camera skill, in fact, that he got such great shots. You know, a good camera person will tell you it's not always the camera. If you're a stills photographer, you don't have to have a Nikon or whatever. You can use one of those cardboard box cameras. If you have a good eye for photography, you can still come up with a good shot. What was so good about that from a filmmaker's perspective was the tight close-up shot. He didn't step back. There might be a tendency for people less experienced to step back and just have everybody in the room all in the shot. But he got right into their face and right into the baby's face and the staff and all the rest. And it really makes for a dramatic moment for sure. One amusing anecdote, because I don't think you see it in the film. The intended parents were Jason and Sarah Geisler in Edmonton. And they already had a child 6 or 7 years ago. And then Sarah was in a horrific car accident, which is why she cannot carry a baby herself now. So they had the child, and they brought the child along with them to the delivery room. And yet, while they were in the throes of labor, you can see the daughter sitting on a bench over by the window, fair distance away, and she's got the whole blanket draped over her body, so she's just kind of wrapped in this blanket.
There's
just too much emotion for
the
process.
There is a beautiful shot of the three of them, and I think Dad's holding her, and she's crying, and Mom's crying.
Yes. after the baby was born, she emerged from the blanket, and she was very tearful as well. You know, it's a very emotional.
Well, you know, I think I read a review or an article about the film where you're quoted, and you say it, quote, goes to the heart of what it means to be a parent. And you're talking about the film, that's that scene. I mean, the whole film does that without a doubt.
Yeah.
But that scene in particular, I think if you had ethical concerns up until that point, you kind of have to start saying, "Well, hang on a minute. I think we need to start asking some other questions."
Yeah, yeah. Because elsewhere, I tried to create a balanced picture of the way people feel about surrogacy in Canada, and most now are in favor of it. There used to be some pushback to it, but I think as people know or learn more about surrogacy, you know, they're coming around. But I had to put in a few of the naysayers, and one of them in the films basically goes after the whole notion of people saying they have a right to have a child.
Yeah, she in fact, I think you put in a piece where she actually says, paraphrase here, but nobody has a right to have a child.
Yeah, you don't have a right. Who gave you that
right? Who gave you that right, yes.
Who gave you that right? You're just assuming it for yourself. You don't have a right to have a child. And I just find that approach kind of startling, because as the person I cleverly put into the film after her... She says, well, it's easy for you to say that. And at the same time, I would say, well, how many children do you have?
Right.
You know? But also, with today's technology, why would you not have a child?
Right.
Why not? Why get all bent out of shape about you don't have this right when if you can do it with technology... why wouldn't you?
Well, I think, you know, there's a sense to me about this film is about, you know, living somebody else's life, or wrong way to put it, spending time in somebody else's shoes, you know, to go cliche. This is, you know, and I loved the woman in India that you interviewed, and she basically says, I don't even want to talk to you if you haven't lived the life of an infertile couple.
Yeah, if you can be in their shoes.
That's right.
That was in answer to the ethical dilemma I first faced. If I can digress for a second.
Yeah, please.
The film 2.5 years ago was titled Reproductive Tourism.
Oh, right, of course, which you do get into.
Boom.
Yeah.
Because the other thing I discovered in reading articles about surrogacy way back when was that a lot of Canadians were traveling overseas to various countries, principally India, but also Thailand, Mexico, Cambodia, places like that, to have their children.
Yes.
And so I, you know, I looked at that to begin with, and I decided, how do I feel about this? These are wealthy or relatively wealthy people going somewhere overseas and taking advantage, or seemingly taking advantage, right, of poor women who you may think are being coerced or pushed into doing something like this because of the monetary value of it. What I think I feel, that there were, you know, don't get me wrong, there were actually, there were some agencies. India's surrogacy business was huge.
Right.
Which is why when they shut it down, I was rather startled, because there was a lot of money in that business, but they shut it down for their own ethical reasons. But before they did, that there were some clinics and such which were not as good as they could be. They would not really care for the women before the birth, and they would basically be, you know, sent away and I don't need to see you again, you know, regardless of what may come after the birth, you know, if there are medical complications or things like that. But much of it was run by good clinics, and the woman we interviewed was Dr. Nayana Patel, and she ran probably the biggest of those clinics. And she was a stout advocate, and what she referred to is in the film when she says, well, if you can live the lives of that infertile couple and know what they have to go through, and then at the same time, if you can live the life of those surrogate and living in poverty, and being a surrogate mother could be life-changing for them. It meant they could buy a house they couldn't otherwise buy.
Right.
It meant they could put their children through school or whatever. So as she described it, it was a win-win situation.
You have an old clip, I think, of Peter Mansbridge with hair, and got to be, what, early 80s?
1991.
Oh, 91. I was going to say early 80s. Sorry,
Peter. You have to understand, because he's talking about surrogacy, you have to understand that surrogacy is really a modern or a recent thing.
Yes.
1991 is basically, you know, when it was just starting to be known about, really.
And yet the first test tube baby, I think, which also comes out in the film, was in the late 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, 78, if I remember correctly. That was the very first IVF test tube baby.
So okay.
Still not a surrogate.
Right.
The
okay.
first surrogate, well, commercial surrogate, because in Britain, the first commercial surrogate was a woman named Kim Cotton.
Yes.
And she suffered for doing that, as she said, did the doctors who created IVF. To begin with, there's so much backlash. If you're the first of anything, as she says, you kind of pay the price. There's backlash. There are horrible headlines when Kim Cotton had that baby.
I was stunned by that. I was, what was I, 13 years old at the time. I actually remember it. As a 13-year-old, I remember some of the press.
Yeah.
Well, she says, she referred to the horrendous press, actually. And then, of course, Mansbridge talked about the explosive ethical questions, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that was 1991. So you see really how recent it is.
And so earlier you had mentioned not really as much of an issue as it used to be. Would you say those explosive ethical questions have kind of gone by the wayside for the most part? Or, I mean, I know certainly you mentioned Cambodia. I know quite a bit about the country. It's still under a embargo. You can't adopt children from the country for various reasons.
And you can't, as a foreigner, you know, staying with the surrogacy thing, you cannot go to Cambodia. You cannot go to India anymore as a foreigner. You cannot go to Mexico as a foreigner and hire their local surrogates. That's all been closed off because of the the big one was mentioned in the film, was what's known as the Baby Gammy case, where an Australian couple commissioned a surrogate in Cambodia to carry a child for them in the event she was implanted with two embryos, possibly three, but two of them took.
Right.
And that's another issue we can get into, that there was a time they implanted many embryos so that if one failed, you didn't have to go through the expense of doing another one. But the problem is, what if all three took? And there was a big case in the States quite recently where it was a single dad And he went, oh, I don't want three, so can you get rid of two for me, please?
Wow.
And it ended up in the courts and everything, quite messy. But anyway, in Cambodia, it was determined during her pregnancy that one of the twins was going to be born with Down syndrome. And so the Australian couple said, well, can you abort that fetus, please? And she, on ethical, moral, religious grounds, refused to do that.
Right.
Again, had a, you know, a tussle, verbal tussle anyway, with the parents-to-be. And in the end, it was basically just agreed then that they would go home with a healthy girl, which they did, and she would keep the Down syndrome child.
Yeah.
Well, when that first hit the headlines, the full story didn't come out immediately. It looked worse than it was. It looked like they only discovered on birth that the child had Down syndrome and the parents abruptly took off with their healthy child. It wasn't quite that bad, still not that good, and obviously embarrassing, really, for Thailand. And so they were really the first to say, we won't do that anymore.
Well, yeah, certainly, and certainly does seem to raise quite a few questions. As, and I think it was at that point in the film too, you start to talk about this idea, and you bring in some lawyers to speak to it, and a few other sort of activists or NGO like voices. State the notion of stateless children. You know, what if?
Yeah, well, that's actually another part of the problem, because there still are some countries where you can go to hire a surrogate, one of them being states in the United States, of course, but also you can go to the Czech Republic and places like that, Ukraine. So there still are places available, and the problem stated by a UK lawyer with a client she had, where they had a Ukraine surrogate, and it was just really a conflict of laws, where the Ukraine laws said, let me see if I get this right. I think the Ukraine laws said that the baby was British.
Mm.
The British laws said the baby was Ukraine.
Right.
So essentially it had no country at the outset that it legally belonged to. Obviously it got cleared up, but those sorts of situations can occur.
Is it, Nick, after, you know, you said earlier that, you know, why wouldn't you? You know, in this age, in this technological age, why wouldn't you have a baby this way? Do you think that that is kind of the more accepted understanding of this? It's just, oh, this is now what we do. This is how we do it. Or is there still a sense out there that we're kind of, I don't know, screwing with nature in a way?
Well, as I say, I think that view, generally speaking, is fading. I think there's much more acceptance of it now. But it's still not always easy for the surrogates. You know, as again, there's some surrogates in the film. We went to a retreat that this agency puts on once or twice a year, where all these surrogates all gather, and they have a weekend of just, you know, bonding with each other.
Sure.
But they also have talks from lawyers and nurses, medical people, and all the rest about what they're doing and the process they're going through. And the surrogates themselves say, you know, the problem is when they're a surrogate, they get 20 questions.
Right.
Why are you doing it? And they don't want the 20 questions.
Right.
They just want them to say, well, that's great, you know. And if they suffer high blood pressure or they have morning sickness, rather than getting the sympathy you might normally get if it's your own pregnancy, instead they get people saying to them, well, you did this to yourself.
Right.
It's your fault, you know.
Yeah, instead of celebrating the opportunity to create life or to bring a life into the world and for somebody else's,
It appears that they get the 20 questions.
They get 20 questions, a Q&A period. Yeah, they talk, and I think at that part in the film they talked a little bit about that stigma that was still attached to it. There's so many. I mean, it does still raise, I suppose, some pretty interesting questions. I don't think, you know, Peter Mansbridge would talk about explosive ethical questions today, but he might ask more, I don't know, maybe emotional, personal questions related. You know, I couldn't help but think about the separation, you know, of the mother and the child, and saying, you know, and hearing Elise near the end of the film talking about, oh, well, I hope, you know, I hope I get to see her again someday. And,
yeah.
You know, and so I wonder about that, you know, disconnect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, as I say, when you talk about ethical questions, the laws were set up when they at the time thought that it might be exploitative,
right,
to be a surrogate, that you might be being exploited. But what it was one of our interview subjects says in the film, you know, you got people who are doing this, who are willing, who are educated, who, you know, who have money and all the rest. It's more exploitative not to pay the surrogate.
Well, that was the question I wanted to get to, too. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. The idea, that's where the exploitation seems to be taking place.
Yeah,
that's
what you would think. Yeah.
And
she also, this person, explored our attitudes to surrogacy as compared to our attitudes to prostitution.
Right.
Which I found a little startling when she first said it, but she basically said, you know, there are obviously those who condone it and think it's a horrible thing, and there's people who feel the same way with surrogacy. But again, it's the same thing if you are choosing it willingly, and obviously not all prostitution angles, you know, apply to that case, but in many, the people are choosing it, you know, out of choice. That's what they wish to do. So she said a lot of people feel that prostitution detracts from what the rest of us think of loving and sex and things like that, and spoils it for them or whatever. And they look at surrogacy in the same way, that surrogacy diminishes what it means for them to be a mother.
Right.
And I found that rather interesting.
Well, I think, you know, I can't help again, but I mean, I see your film as a whole lot of things for sure. But for me, it's about walking in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah.
And it's a celebration of life, Nick. I mean, really, yeah. I mean, you know, we could get into the science of it. You do a little bit, the technology of it, and isn't it wonderful? And you talk a little bit about the history and so on and all that. So it's very informative on a certain level, very educational. But for me, it was, wow, this is remarkable. The lengths that people will go to bring a life into the world, to, you know, the two Phils,
great characters.
Yeah. And talking about how, you know, and just Elise, how affectionate, Elise was towards them and, you know, the FaceTime baby, basically. I mean, it's remarkable how that relationship develops through Facebook.
Well,
and she ends up carrying a child for them. I mean, it's just, we really do live in a crazy, beautiful world.
Yes. Well, and, you know, in the film, we also talk about how infertility has been rising. People say, well, I wonder how that is. But of course, you amongst the reasons, you have women and couples waiting till later in life before they have the children, and they may discover that it's then sort of a little too late for them.
Right.
And of course, then you have the rise of same-sex couples. And the people you referred to are Montreal same-sex couple, both named Phil.
Both named Phil.
It was great.
It's fantastic. Yeah.
Two Phils.
The two
and Elise, Phils. Their surrogate, was part of a same-sex union in Woodstock, Ontario. So, I mean, I love that dynamic. And I actually delayed or got the Doc Channel to agree to me delivering the film so that I could follow them up to the birth, which actually was August 28th, I think, something like that. I was supposed to have delivered the film by then, but I said, I've got this great story. I want to follow it through to their birth. So
nice.
That's why we put it off. And it's,
I believe the press release for the film talked about infertility tripling in the last three decades.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and for those reasons. So yeah, you know, surrogacy is on an even bigger and faster rise, because of the increase in infertility, but B, also because people are in many cases only learning now that they have that option.
Right.
They hadn't considered it. They you know, go through the usual attempts at IVF and things like that, and didn't really consider that they could do it. Or maybe they thought, oh, well, I have to travel to India to do that, and I don't necessarily want to do that. So, you know, so they didn't. And I think as they learned that these things can happen and happen in a beautiful way, there is more people turning to them. Of course, there are never going to be enough surrogates to answer the need of everyone in Canada. And the, I think, slightly sad result of so many other countries closing their borders is that a lot of foreign couples, particularly from countries like France, where surrogacy, any type of surrogacy, is illegal. You can't even have your sister be a surrogate or whatever in Germany and other complicated places with laws. They are suddenly discovering Canada as a surrogacy destination, as a destination for what I called reproductive tourism.
Right.
Because, hey, Canada has free surrogates. You can't pay them. And guess what? Canada has a health care system, so you don't have to pay medical costs.
You just got
to
play.
This is great. This is a win-win situation. Let's go to Canada.
You just have to pay for the, what was it, blueberry ice cream again? Or was it blueberries and ice cream?
Yeah.
Well, Nick, thanks for your time today. And for it's a beautiful film. It's an intimate film and a real celebration of life. I really enjoyed it. I wanted it to keep going. I hope everybody gets to see it for a variety of reasons. Tell us, it sounds like it's going to have a life online as well, outside of the documentary channel.
As we said at the top, it's online for at least another 4 days or something like that. So depending when people are hearing this, but go there quickly to Documentary Channel's website and find Having Our Baby, and there you'll find a free link to watch it online. Otherwise, you can watch it on the Documentary Channel, but you just need to know, depending on where you are in Canada, that it's at different times in different places. So in other words, the main networks, when they broadcast a show across Canada, every region delays it and plays it at the same time all across Canada. Well, this is different. It's played once all across Canada. So for example, tomorrow, the 7th, it'll be on at 11 p.m. in Ontario. But if you are in Vancouver, it'll be on at 8 p.m. Alberta, 9 p.m., et cetera, Winnipeg, 10 p.m. So all of these times are Eastern times, Tuesday the 7th at 11 p.m., Wednesday the 8th at 10 a.m., so you got to get up early in Vancouver, 7. Sunday the 12th at 8 p.m. Eastern time, so that will be 5 p.m. Do you like how I'm doing these quick calculations?
That's right.
I credit my education that I got in the 50s.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Now it's just an application for your iPhone. That's all you need now, right?
Yeah. And Saturday the 25th, also at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So again, 5 p.m., et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I've been talking to
But the best thing to do is go to the website on Documentary Channel, Having Our Baby, and the time should all be listed there. There is also our separate website, which is www.havingourbaby.com.
Oh, that's great.
And if you go there, you can also watch the short 2-minute trailer and also link to, we have Facebook page, Twitter, all of that. Modern stuff understand.
They didn't teach you about that in the 50s, Nick. No,
50s, 60s.
I'm disappointed.
I'm quite that old.
yeah. Having Our Baby is the name of the film. The Surrogacy Boom is the subtitle. And it's we've been having a great conversation here today with Nick Orchard, who's with Soapbox Productions. Nick, thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, David. I appreciate you having me.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.